Hi and happy Friday. This is WSHU's After All Things with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Fairfield police say speed cameras are working. Voters weigh in on Governor Hochul's performance. Plus, we have the latest from WSHU's Birdsong Break and experts work to make AI a safer mental health tool. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Fairfield police say school zone speed cameras have decreased speeding by 83% in town. WSHU's Ava Keough reports.
Police Chief Michael Paris says Fairfield's new speed cameras are a success. He says there has been a decrease in speeding. During the warning period in May, 94,000 warnings were issued. Between June 1st and June 16th, there have only been 8,000 citations. Paris says the purpose was to change motorist behavior and to enforce traffic safety, not to raise revenue. The six locations where cameras were installed were chosen because of their high accident rates. Roughly 71% of citations issued have been to non-Fairfield residents. However, the police department has received criticism for how the program was approved and is being run. Paris says he understands disapproval comes with any new enforcement efforts. Ava Keough, WSHU News.
New polling data is out on what New York voters think about a variety of topics, from Governor Hochul's performance to data centers. The New York Public News Network's Erica Kenny has key takeaways.
The number one concern on the minds of New York voters in the latest poll from Siena is affordability. Siena research pollster Stephen Greenberg says this news should come as no surprise.
It's the economy, stupid.
However, Greenberg says that candidates from both sides of the aisle will have to adjust their messaging to speak to voters who are concerned about rising prices.
Be you the most conservative Republican or the most liberal Democrat, what voters want to hear from you is, how are you going to make their lives better?
The Siena poll also showed that a majority of New York voters from across the political spectrum think a recently passed one-year moratorium on data centers will be good for the state.
We don't see the typical partisan divide on this issue. So a majority of Democrats, 53%, think that the moratorium will be good for New York. But a plurality of Republicans, 40 to 27%, and a plurality of independent voters, 40 to 24%, also think it will be good.
Governor Hochul has not signed the moratorium into law yet, and there are developers still looking to build data centers on various sites across western New York, including in Niagara Falls, Tonawanda, and Genesee County. When asked what these numbers mean for midterm elections in November, Greenberg said that polls cannot predict the future.
A poll is a snapshot in time. It is not a magic eight ball. It is not a fortune teller. It can't tell you what's going to happen in the future.
Instead, Greenberg says that polling data can help New Yorkers understand what they and their neighbors are feeling. In Buffalo, I'm Erica Kenny for the New York Public News Network.
Butterfly bushes, those fluffy shrubs with lavender flower clusters, have been a mainstay in many New England gardens for more than 100 years. The New England News Collaborative's Jenny Ahrens explains why pollinator advocates now say they should be ripped out and replaced.
Big, bushy, and beautiful, butterfly bushes are a great source of nectar for pollinators, but that is the only food these non-native shrubs provide. Michelle Detweiler is an ecological planting designer for Pollinator Pathways. She says butterfly bush is not a good habitat plant.
Because it doesn't provide for their caterpillars, or any native caterpillar for that means.
The president of Pollinator Pathways, Donna Merrill, calls the shrub an ecological trap. That's because butterflies have such a short window to find a food source to lay their eggs.
It just interrupts and disrupts the butterfly propagation within your garden and within your neighborhood and town.
Detweiler recommends replacing butterfly bushes with plants that can support butterfly caterpillars. She recommends any native milkweed, goldenrods, asters, sunflowers, and phlox. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Jenny Ahrens.
It's become so common for people to ask AI about their emotions and relationships that some therapists have started to factor it into treatment. That story is coming up.
A murder mystery, a musical comedy, and a night out in support of WSHU. Join us for the East Coast premiere of Morton Meets the Eye, a new film from Easton native John Sonneborn. After the screening, stay for a conversation with the filmmakers and cast. It's an evening of laughs, surprises, and movie magic at the Shue Community Theater in Fairfield, Monday, July 20th at 7 p.m. For tickets and to watch the trailer, visit WSHU.org.
A rookie golfer from Milford, Connecticut is showing promise. Ben James played 4 rounds at the U.S. Open this month on Long Island, and now he's back in Connecticut playing in the Travelers Championship. He says his love for the game started at the Great River Golf Club in his hometown. A dead whale washed up on shore in Montauk this morning. Officials say the carcass is quite decayed and they haven't yet identified what kind of whale it is. The Atlantic Marine Conservation Society is working to remove the whale and perform a necropsy. Suffolk County will begin more extensive testing of private water wells near a battery storage plant in East Hampton. After a 2023 fire at the site, early testing shows high levels of PFAS. The so-called forever chemicals are linked to a variety of health issues. According to Newsday, the county has been visiting homes with private wells near the site. 7 of the 26 have been tested so far. This is WSHU's Bird Song Break, calling our region's sandy beaches home for the summer. It's the black skimmer. These guys eat small fish found in more shallow waters, and they're the only birds in North America that hunt by skimming the surface. Take a breath, listen, and let nature remind you to slow down. This has been WSHU's Bird Song Break featuring the black skimmer this week. Special thanks to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and visit WSHU.org for more. Millions of Americans turn to AI chatbots, including ChatGPT, for advice about their mental health. The precise numbers are hard to pinpoint, but it's become so common for people to ask AI about their emotions that some therapists have started to factor it into treatment. And the New England News Collaborative's Lynn Jolicoeur tells us experts in the field are working to make AI better and safer as a mental health tool.
I have a therapy appointment tomorrow.
This is how Susie Sanford processes a lot of life at a keyboard. She talks things out with Claude, the AI chatbot.
I want to make sure that everything I've been dealing with, I talk about to my therapist.
She asks Claude for an overview of their recent chats. The chatbot spits out a summary that mentions her daily stresses and her feelings of being unseen and unheard. The 32-year-old from Fitchburg says the chatbot helps her piece together fractured thoughts between therapy sessions.
In those times where there's an emotional upheaval of some sort, that I feel like I can't connect to those understandings from therapy right away. Like, here's the thing, can you speak it back to me so that I understand or can find perspective in it in an immediate, always on 24/7 way?
The chatbot suggests ways to release stress, such as specific breathing exercises. Sanford was nervous to tell her therapist about it. She didn't want her to think she'd replace her with a chatbot, but she did talk about it, and her therapist was supportive.
She seemed like, oh, that's really interesting. That could be really useful. You know, I didn't know that it was able to do that.
It can do a lot, even converse.
Take your time. I'm here when you're ready. If it's a lot to process, I'm happy to help think through it.
Here's ChatGPT talking to Christine Crawford.
I feel so bad that they had to go through all of that trauma. And I want
That's
to
Dr. Christine Crawford, a Boston psychiatrist. She uses ChatGPT to sort through things that come up as she cares for patients.
I just feel quite overwhelmed by the whole experience talking to them today.
It's natural to feel that weight, but remember, you don't have to erase the past to be helpful in the present.
Crawford wanted to demonstrate the chatbot with the voice option because it sounds so real. Too real, she says. It freaks her out. So she usually types. She says many of her teen and college-age students use AI a lot to figure out how to respond to text messages or prepare for conversations that make them anxious. Crawford asks every patient about their AI use.
To get a better sense as to what's inside of my patient's brain, to use their conversations off of chat as a jumping off point for better connecting and better engaging with the patient in person.
Clinical social worker Dan Suttleman of Newton sometimes even asks kids to take out their phones and chat with AI during their therapy sessions.
If they're having trouble speaking to me about something, and I know that it happens to be a child who uses it a lot, I have said, let's pull up ChatGPT and ask it what you might say or how you might say it.
Some adult clients have told Suttleman they've asked chatbots about observations he's made about them. He says it can be challenging because of how the AI responds.
It ends up sort of invalidating the work that I'm doing with the person and validating something about the person.
That's because generative AI chatbots are trained to use supportive, empathetic language. They're designed to engage with lots of questions. Mental health clinicians say the validation can be good, or it can be unhealthy or risky. There have been lawsuits that claim chatbots encouraged suicides or fueled delusions. Clinicians worry people with social anxiety could get hooked on AI and become more isolated.
At the end of the day, it's a piece of computer code. It has no empathy. It doesn't know what you're feeling.
Psychiatrist John Torres wants to educate people about AI and mental health. He directs the Digital Psychiatry Division at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston.
We could test right now. We could go to ChatGPT and say, my thoughts have been so terrible, I could never tell anybody. So let's see what it tells us. It says, I'm glad you told me. First, I want to ask gently, are these thoughts about harming yourself? If so, you should call 988.
That's the National Suicide and Crisis Hotline. The chatbot also mentions a few forms of therapy that might help.
It says, right now I mostly want you to feel this, you're not alone. I mean, so it's not a bad response, right?
ChatGPT's owner, OpenAI, says it's improved the chatbot's ability to detect and respond to signs of emotional distress, but the platform is not intended to provide medical care. Torres says generative AI can be helpful for initial feedback, but it usually won't get to the core of what's wrong. He's partnered with the National Alliance on Mental Illness to analyze how different chatbots respond to specific mental health scenarios. He's developing a website for people to find out which ones respond best to their types of concerns.
It doesn't say you should use AI. It doesn't say you shouldn't use AI, but it's closer maybe to a nutrition label. It says this one has this, this, and this. I think that most people want to make a good decision.
But some researchers want to engineer better AI specifically for mental health. Dartmouth College professor Nick Jacobson and his colleagues are developing a phone texting chatbot called Therabot.
We have an avatar at the very bottom that is animated.
It looks like a little robot.
Yep. So folks are constantly reminded that this is not a human that they're interacting with.
It's the first generative AI therapy chatbot to undergo a clinical trial. Jacobson says its algorithm is trained on real therapeutic interventions instead of on all of the data from the internet. He stresses no AI can fully replicate what happens in high-quality human psychotherapy, but there's a massive shortage of providers.
One of the things that's exciting about this type of generative AI in particular is it's accessible all the time. So if somebody is experiencing insomnia and can't sleep and really struggling with their mental health at 3 a.m., this type of technology could be there actually working with you in those moments.
AI user Susie Sanford recently realized the always-on supportive dialogue may have sucked her in too much.
I mean, the conversations will hook you.
Though she does sometimes get AI to challenge her. She says she even asked Claude what it thought about her doing this interview. She was stressed she might sound like she's advocating for AI. That led the chatbot to ask this.
What are you losing by talking to an AI rather than the people in your life? And I thought about that, like, I don't remember it becoming a habit, but I think now it is.
She plans to take a step back to think about what happens when she avoids real conversations and instead turns to the almost always agreeable artificial intelligence. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Lynn Joliker.
Food.
For the latest from around Long Island Sound, listen on the radio, online, with our free app, and of course, tune in right here to the After All Things podcast every weekday evening. And don't forget to check out WSHU's new merch shop for tees, tanks, mugs, and more. It's at WSHU.org. Just click on shop up at the top of the page. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a wonderful rest of your Friday and a great weekend. I'll speak to you on Monday.